Oh man! So I know some of you. If you weren't here last week, why not? That's the number one question. I've really enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to as we continue to study the life of Moses and what we can draw from it, how it can inspire us. Last week, I really enjoyed the time that we shared together. And for those of you who didn't get a chance to hang out with us, I'll catch you up really quickly. We began studying the life of Moshe. His Hebrew name. It's actually his Egyptian name. It's what he was named by Pharaoh's daughter. We began studying his life, and we started off in Exodus chapter 1, and we started looking at how there was this amazing plan. It was almost a story too incredible to believe that God had a plan all along to rescue Moses from the Pharaoh's edict to throw all the children in the Nile, but yet Moses was scooped up and brought into Pharaoh's court by one of Pharaoh's own children and was raised to be a part of this royal family. And it was just an incredible story. But what I found so fascinating about the first part of Moses' story and really chapter one of Exodus is that there's this incredible story that's just amazing. Like you couldn't dream up a more perfect story. Yet the name of God wasn't even mentioned. Like there was this beautiful story that God clearly had a plan. So the name of God wasn't mentioned, but the hand of God was all over it. And that's so inspiring for me in the times of my life where I felt like, man, God, are you even there? You know, doesn't it feel like there are times when you want for God's presence to be revealed? Like, have you even ever prayed and said, God, if you're here, show me, reveal yourself to me. And we see in Moses' life that even in the moments where he felt his presence the least, God still was working in his life. God had a plan. And so today we want to pick up the story. And if you have your Bibles, we'll invite you to follow along in Exodus chapter 2. We're just going to continue along and go through the story. So today we're going to start. We ended with chapter 2, verse 10. We'll pick up the story then today in verse 11. It says, one day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. Now, we'll stop there for a moment. Between verse 10, where we left Moses last week, he was just a child. We don't really know exactly how old, but he was a child, and he had been rescued from the Nile, brought into Pharaoh's household, and then it just kind of stops, and now it picks up, and it says, one day after Moses had grown up. So quite a bit of time now has elapsed between verse 10 and verse 11. At this point in his life, Moses was 40 years old. We know this because in the book of James, James tells us that Moses was 40 years old when this next part of his story begins to happen. So I just want to hang out there for a second and let that sink in. Like in literally the span of in between verse 10 where it ends and verse 11 where it begins, 40 years pass. Because it's easy for us when we're reading through it, we just kind of cruise through the story. But Moses had to take those day by day, right? Those are 40 years of getting up in the morning, wondering what am I going to do in my life? What is God doing? Where is God? 40 years of living in a foreign land, now being adopted by this other family, trying to figure out 40 years of questions, of wrestling with what was his story going to be about. Like 40 years passes in the span of just a dot, a period at the end of a sentence, 40 years. Moses, some of you, by the way, 40, some of you haven't turned 40 yet. Let me just tell you, 40 sucks, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. 40 sucks. Evie told me, and she reminded me this day, she says, she goes, man, you look like you got a six-pack. And I'm like, oh, yeah. She's like, chicken nuggets. I'm like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Because 40 just sucks. Like, I used to be able to lean over and tie my shoes without having to hyperventilate for a few minutes, like holding my breath. You know what I mean? Like it's just turning. Some of you have turned 40, you know, like, yeah, he's right, man. It sucks. Like, I used to be able to, like, to go camping and sleep on the ground without fear of, like, severe spinal injury come morning. Like, I don't know what happened. But something happens, you turn 40. And this is what Moses is going through, right? Like he's not a young dude anymore. He's 40 years old, and 40 years have transpired. And it tells us that after Moses had grown up. Now, here's what we know. We know that Moses was raised in Pharaoh's household, right? He was now living in his adopted son of grandson of the Pharaoh. And what we know is that Moses was educated by some of the best scholars in the world. There was really, Egypt was the pinnacle of, in that day, Egypt was the pinnacle of science, of learning, of education. It was the pinnacle of their architecture. I mean, think the pyramids. Like, nobody could compare to Egypt, the things they could build. No one could compare to their culture and to the arts, and they were strong in philosophy, their military strength, mathematics and language. I mean, they had developed all of these incredible sciences. And so we know Moses was raised in this culture that was at the very pinnacle of the education of its of of its day. History tells us, actually, that one of the pharaohs, a guy by the name of Thutmose III, some of you have heard of him, but Thutmose, he actually founded a royal school where he brought in the very best and the most learned scholars of the world. Like, he brought in teachers and trainers from all over the world to come to his school at Egypt and to train his court in how to be better leaders. It's not a stretch to think that Moses was a part of something like this, right? So we know that Moses was had the finest education in the world at the day. So here Moses, for 40 years, he's growing up. He didn't really know what's going on in his life. Like, he knows something cool happened when he was a baby. He knows that he was somehow special. But now for 40 years, he's just doing the stuff that you do if you grow up as a child in Pharaoh's court, right? Moses now is being educated. He's learning military strategy. Moses is learning things like economic theory. Moses is learning things like poetry and how to tell a story, maybe how to write a book. Might come in handy for a guy like Moses. Moses is learning things about law. He's learning like how to write legal code. This might come in handy in the future for a guy like Moses. Some historians say that Moses was one of the star pupils in a school like this. Some historians say that Moses, I mentioned this last week, but some historians say Moses was a military commander, that some history tells us that Moses led a brigade on a military campaign into Ethiopia and won some amazing victories for the Pharaoh. And so, you know, we don't know any of that for sure, but here's what we do know. What we do know is that in Pharaoh's household, that Pharaoh paid the bill for Moses to have one of the best educations on the planet. Like, Moses' life was headed somewhere, right? In chapter 1, what we studied last week, God had a plan, and God was executing this plan, and things were coming together, and you could tell that Moses' life was being prepared for something amazing. So, continue here in verse number 11. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were. So Moses leaves the palace. Like, I can only imagine that Moses, now at 40 years old, he's starting to, things are just beginning to change inside of his soul. You ever have those moments where things just are like you're longing for something? You can't even put your finger on it. You really don't know what it is, but you have that sense maybe at times in your life where you're looking for something a little bit more. And Pharaoh, like, maybe it was a midlife crisis. I don't know. But for Pharaoh, for Moses here, instead of like going, like he has a midlife crisis, apparently instead of going out and buying like a shiny new red camel or camel, like whatever, like he decides that he's going to go and visit his own people. And I think that's interesting. He calls them people because nobody in the Egyptian royal courts would have referred to the Hebrews as people because they weren't people, they were slaves. They weren't people, they were property. And I think it's interesting here that the scriptures tell us that Moses went to, and he saw them as people. He saw them as what everyone else saw as a commodity, he saw as a person. Where everyone else only perceived a threat, Moses saw a soul. And I think this is interesting because remember last week, remember his mom. Remember when she was faced with this evil command from a vile Pharaoh that said, we're going to kill all the male children. And how his mom put little Pharaoh into a basket and entrusted them to the kindness and the humanity of even of their enemies. That she saw her enemies as people. And now Moses is taking after his mom. He's got a little bit of that in him because he begins to see the Hebrew slaves as people. And I wonder how much of our world's atrocities, how much of the injustice that we deal with on a day-by-day basis, how much of it could be completely taken care of if we would just begin to see each other as brothers, as sisters. If we could just learn, for a lot of us, we could end right here. That we could end here if we could walk out today and just make a commitment that when you're having one of those, you're having that thing with that person at work, and they're just, everything inside of you is just starting to build up, and there's this rage. If you could just stop and in that moment begin to see them as an image bearer, as a person who was made in the image of God, as a person. Because Moses, it said he went out to his people, but it not only says that he went out to his people, it says he went to his own people. His own people. You see that? Moses went, and he went to the Hebrews, and he said, man, these are my people. These are my people. He began to have a sense of ownership. He began to take some ownership in their plight. Their struggles became his struggles. The injustice they faced became an injustice that he was facing. He recognized that this was his people. Like, you need a people, don't you? You need a place in your world where you recognize that these are my people. This is where I belong. Man, I pray that you find a place like that. We work so hard at Dialogue to make Dialogue to be a place where every single person, regardless of who you are, where you've come from, what you believe, what you think about God, what you think about politics, we want to be a place where we can all come together and we can be family. That's why family nights, we say all the time, family nights are so vital to what we do. It's a place where, well, this is more than what we say. I say it all the time, but I believe to the depths of my being that Dialogue Church happens on Thursday nights. That Sundays is just, we just get together because we like to rock out. But Dialogue is a family, and it happens on Thursdays. And so if you don't have a place where you have your people, I invite you to come. If you felt like you've never really connected to a place where you could have that sensation, you say, man, these are my people, because Moses had that. He began to realize, he said, listen, these are not just people. It's wonderful that he could dignify their humanity by recognizing their personhood. But you know what's even more beautiful? He said, they're my people. They're my people. And he began to empathize with their struggle, and he began to identify with their pain, and he took ownership of the burdens that they were facing. And I love this. It wasn't only that they were just people. It wasn't only that it was his people. But you notice it says he went to them. He went to them. In other words, Moses didn't just stand off at a distance. He wasn't the type of person that would just say, man, yeah, there's some really bad things happening in the world. Man, I hope it gets better. But Moses, he went to them. He took action. He stood in the midst of the injustice, and he saw what was going on. He didn't fold his arms. He didn't stand on the sidelines hoping somebody else would do something sometime. But he went to them. And I love what it says. It says he watched them at their hard labor. He watched them. Here Moses was living in the palace, enjoying all the luxuries, all the amenities of life in Pharaoh's court, while his own people were enslaved. And it wasn't fair. And he watched them at their hard labor. And all of a sudden, this sense of injustice just began to boil inside of Moses' soul. And he saw it. He said he watched them, and he saw their misery, and he saw what they were going through, and he empathized with their struggle and with their plight. And you know what? I think it would have been so easy to dismiss. I think it would have been so easy just to say, oh, well, that's life, you know? That's just the way it goes. Some people are born with privilege, some aren't. That's just life. It would have been so easy for a person like Pharaoh, because remember, for 40 years now, he had been trained in the ways of the Egyptian. For 40 years, he had enjoyed living in the most powerful and influential family on earth. For 40 years, he had enjoyed all the luxuries of being a child of Pharaoh. But now all of a sudden, he begins to identify with this ostracized and oppressed people. And he watched them, and he saw them struggling at their hard labor, and he couldn't dismiss it. It'd been so easy just to let it go. It'd been so easy to say, well, you know, just to really turn a blind eye to their struggle, but he could not do that. Some people just have access to healthcare. Some people just have access to good education. Some people have it, and some people don't. It's so easy just to dismiss. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. That's just life. It's so easy to dismiss, isn't it? I mean, look around. Have you seen the injustices that happened in the world that we're living in today? And I'm not even talking about around the world, but what about right here? Because what I find so fascinating, and this is what I am so guilty of, we all do this, we complain about our lives, don't we? We look at our life like, you know, how awful it was that we were born in the Midwest of all places. Why couldn't we lived in a cool place, you know? We're like, how did we end up in Muncie? We're always like, well, no one intentionally comes to Muncie. People only go from Muncie. No one really, you know, we complain about our own life. But listen, I'm with you, and I do the same thing. But let me tell you, it's not Libya, you know? If you want to put things in perspective, maybe you look at your life and what you're living and what you're going through and the hand that's been dealt to you, and maybe you look at yourself and you think, man, this sucks for me. But listen, at least you weren't born in a Syrian refugee camp to Syrian refugee parents, right? Maybe your life has been really, really difficult, but at least your parents don't work 18 hours a day in an Indonesian sweatshop. Because that's reality too. See, what you're going through may be difficult, but sometimes we need to have those moments where we get this wider view, and we can step back, and we can zoom out, and we can see a little bit of what's going on. And this is exactly what's happening to Moses. He had this very narrow focus of this life that was so full of privilege, where he was so accustomed to power and to prosperity that he really couldn't even identify with the suffering all around him. And then in one moment, his eyes were opened. And in one moment, he saw. He saw it. And here's what Moses could not shake. He could not shake the fact, he could not shake the truth that his plush lifestyle was only made possible at the expense of another. And his eyes were opened. It says he watched them. He watched them. I think it's more than going on than just like, you know, photons are bouncing off his retina. He was perceiving something. He was seeing something he'd never seen before. You've had those moments of enlightenment. You've had those moments where all of a sudden your eyes were open to a truth that you're like, how did I not see? And Moses, he perceived them. I mean, you've had that, right? You ever had something that once you saw it, you couldn't unsee it? You ever had one of those things that once you saw what was going on, once you became aware, try as you might, you simply could not shake it? And listen, it would be so much easier when you have those moments. They're beautiful. Those moments of enlightenment are so wonderful. But listen, many times it would be so much easier if you could just go back to the blindness that you had before, right? Wouldn't it be so much easier if you could just go back to where you were just blissfully ignorant and just live in that just bliss, like just being completely unaware? But you can't. It's just, I used to play in a band, we named our band Sunday Bliss. It was an indictment on how religion often drives people to the sense of apathy, where religion often kind of brings people to the sense where everything is good and everything is great and God is good and kind of creates this place where religion kind of lulls people into a state of apathy while so many other people around the world suffer. Because ignorance truly is bliss at times. But Moses, his eyes were opened and he saw. So question, have you seen the suffering in the world? Are your eyes open to injustice? Because look around. Look around you. I mean, have you even asked the question? Have you asked yourself, how is it that I can walk into Walmart and buy goods that have been shipped halfway around the world for less money than it would cost to make them right here? Because that didn't happen just because somebody in some factory in, you know, South America somewhere was just generous. It's like, ah, that's cool. I'll work for $2 a day. You know what I mean? It wasn't. Have you ever asked yourself the hard questions? Have you ever considered what your impact on the environment actually is? Or is it easier just to say, I just want to live this ignorance and this blissful state of not knowing? But Moses had a moment where his eyes were open. He watched them at their hard labor, it says. See, I think for a lot of times, for a lot of people, living in that ignorance, it is so much easier, it's so much safer, but not Moses. Moses could not unsee what he had seen. And he could not stand by and do nothing. He could not be one more person who would just have it live his life on the backs of another. He would not be one who stood by and did nothing where those around him were victimized and oppressed. He couldn't do it. As it goes on to say, he watched them at their injustice. Then listen to what he saw. Here's what he saw. Verse 11 continues. It says, he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew. The word beating here is an interesting word in the Hebrew language. It's the word nacha. You kind of have to have like a pretty severe sinus infection kind of going on in the back of your throat. Nacha. Nacha. But the word nacha that's translated beating here, it literally means, I'll give you the definition. It literally means to scourge, to destroy, to ravage, or to administer a murderous beating. Nacha means to beat someone with the intent to kill them, to destroy them. Moses sees something that is evil. That's what this is trying to tell us. Moses sees something that is so wrong, that is vile, that it must be stopped. It has to be stopped. So look at verse number 12. Look what Moses does. Moses, looking this way and that way and seeing no one. That's important. We're going to come back to that later. But looking this way and that way and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid his body in the sand. Look this way and look that way. He saw no one. We'll come back to that. But it says he killed the Egyptian. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The word killed here is the exact same word for beating in the last verse, nakah. That's where translators, when they have to translate this stuff, a lot of these words have a lot of nuance. But here's, just to make it simple, Moses did to the Egyptian what the Egyptian was doing to the Hebrew. That's what Moses did. Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. He just went Old Testament, like, you know, kind of literally. He went in there and he killed the guy. He administered a murderous beatdown. He beat him, and he beat him, and he beat him until every ounce of life was drained from that body. All of the rage, all of the anger that he had seen, from all the injustice and all the years of abuse and all the slavery, and it all came to the surface and began to boil like a rage inside of Moses, and he took matters into his own hands, and in a fit of rage, he executed judgment on on this Egyptian taskmaster. Now, question, and I want to get some feedback on this. I want to know what you think. Was it wrong for Moses to kill the Egyptian? Was it murder, or could you say was it a sin? Give me some feedback. What? You think it was a sin? Somebody else? By the way, disclaimer, theologians have debated this for centuries. And so there people weighed on different sides on this. So I don't know if there is a right or wrong. Maybe you're both right. So don't feel like there's like, I don't want to be wrong. No, just what's your opinion? Was this wrong? Was it murder? Was it sin? No? Yeah?
Isn't that why he wasn't allowed to go to the promised land?
Yeah, there was some repercussions for sure. So I think that's
God
answered. Somebody else? Anyone have a thought on this? Okay, well, like I said, throughout history, the theologians have debated this. Let me give you a couple that people have weighed in. Number one, John Calvin, famous French theologian. Some of you have heard of him, kind of the Calvinist dude. So if you know any Southern Baptists or Presbyterians or whatever, you can thank this guy for them. So, but anyway, so he's a great French theologian. Here's what he said. Calvin says, no, Moses was not wrong. Moses was not wrong that he was justified in what he did. It was not murder. But St. Augustine, I know some people say Augustine, little disclaimer, I say Augustine. But St. Augustine, a couple centuries earlier, he weighs in on this. And he says, yeah, it was murder. He said, Moses, what he saw was wrong, but Moses did not have the authority to take the law into his own hand and execute judgment. So people have weighed in on this on both sides. But look, I was going to tell you what I think. All right, I think that Moses knew what he did was wrong. I think that Moses did something that he knew in his heart was wrong, because look what it says. It says, then he hid the body in the sand, right? Look at just how Moses reacts. Moses didn't say, boom, justice, I'm right, you know? Moses is like, oh, crap, what have I done? And he was so concerned about what he had done and the repercussions that was good. Like, I think Moses clearly knew that he had screwed up, because he takes the body and he goes into the desert sands and he digs a little hole and he covers it up. He's like, man, I hope no one ever finds out. Hope nobody ever sees what happened. See, here's the thing. Whether you think it was right or wrong, we don't know. I mean, you can have your own opinion. But what we do know is Moses knew that what he had done, and Moses thought he had messed up. Moses thought he had messed up. Now, here's another question. Was it wrong for Moses to intervene? Was it wrong for Moses to do something? See, I think that's where we all agree, right? No, something needed to be done. Somebody needed to step in. There was an injustice that was being transgressed. This was not just a punishment. This was not a Hebrew taskmaster who was punishing a slave in some sort of a just way. This was a murderous beatdown. This was rage, and it was wrong, and it was evil, and Moses had seen something, and now it became his obligation, I think, right? Don't you all agree? If you see something going down, you have an obligation then to take action. Moses had an obligation to do something true. But I don't believe that Moses had the right to confront an out-of-control taskmaster with his own out-of-control rage. I don't believe that Moses had the right to step in and take the law in his own hand. But that's just my opinion. You are free to disagree. But here's one thing that we do know. This is what we do know. That the revolution that God was calling Moses to was not a revolution that was going to be won by Moses' might and by Moses' strength, by Moses' ability to fight. It was going to be won by the hand of God itself. So something's going on inside of Moses. I mean, you can see this. Like, I love how you don't hear anything about Moses' life for 40 years, and then all of a sudden you see this, right? Because I think the writers here, and again, history tells us that Moses either wrote or at least had a strong hand in writing this. So I think even Moses would say, let me tell you what was going on inside of me. I was kind of messed up. I had lived in Pharaoh's court, and I enjoyed the bounty of the land, and then all of a sudden things began to change for me. And it didn't happen until I was 40 years old. That was a long time. But things began to change for me. Something's going on, and now he's losing control. All right, now all of a sudden his emotions are out of whack, and he has all this anger. Maybe he had bottled it up. You ever bottled things inside? You ever tried to hold things in and repress them and just like think happy thoughts until all of a sudden you couldn't hold it in anymore? This is what happened to Moses. I think Moses is trying to tell us. He's like, listen, I was out of control. He doesn't even know what he's doing anymore. But here's he goes, listen, I had all this training. I was educated by the best educators in the world. I had the best education that money could buy. But now I'm filled with this awareness, and I could not unsee what I had seen. And I saw the sins that were being perpetrated against my own people. And what was I going to do? What was I going to do? Like, I think Moses is trying to tell us, I don't even think he knew really what to do in this moment. Have you ever felt that? You ever felt like you were being pulled in a million different directions, and you ever felt like, I want to kill the guy, but I maybe shouldn't kill the guy. Maybe I should. Like, I don't know. Have you ever been like so confused, you just had no idea what to do? That's what Moses is trying to tell us. He's like, listen, I was going through something, and I was kind of a mess. And so verse number 13, let's see how this continues. It says, the next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. Now, this is interesting again, because it's not like Moses was every day of his life going out and hanging out with Hebrew slaves, right? He was royalty. They hung out in the palace. They didn't go around the commoners. They didn't go out where there was disease and these people. But now all of a sudden, 2 days in a row, Moses is like, he's being pulled. Can you see how his heart is being pulled by something? He's next day he finds himself again, like, I just happen to be in this part of town. No, you know, I mean, no one's buying that. This is something with intent that he cannot shake, man. I don't think Moses slept at all the night before. It doesn't say that, but that's just my thought. I don't think he slept at all. I think he can't shake what's happening. Something's happening inside of his soul. The next day he went out and he saw two Hebrews fighting this time. And he asked the one in the wrong. He says, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? And the men said to him, who made you ruler and judge over us? That's the question. See, this is where the story kind of hangs. Who made you ruler and judge? See, that's the question, isn't it? Who died and made you boss? That's what the guy said. Who died and made you boss? Who authorized you? Who's behind what you're doing? Who's the one that even told you you were the type of person that could step up and do something in this situation anyway? Who appointed you to step in? You ever felt like that? You ever felt like there was something in your life that you kind of felt destined? Maybe even had the terminology, maybe say, like, I even felt like I was called to do something, but yet all of a sudden, there was these other voices inside of your head that was like, who are you? Who are you to do this? Who are you think you're going to be the one to make a difference? You think you're going to be the one to step in the middle of the situation where all hell is breaking loose, and you think you're going to, seriously? Who are you? See, this is the question. This is the question that Moses is struggling with. This is the question that's just beginning to wrestle inside of his soul. Who are you? Who made you ruler and judge over us? Interesting question, but I can tell you what the answer is, right? We know what the answer is. You know what the answer is. Who had orchestrated this whole series of events? Who was the one who had orchestrated this incredible plan that saved Moses from Pharaoh's edict and brought Moses out of the Nile, placed Moses into Pharaoh's court to be raised as one of the sons of the emperor himself? I tell you who it was. It was God. That's who. Who had put Moses in this position? God had. See, I think what Moses is now beginning to wrestle with the questions that are at the epicenter of every one of our lives and every one of our stories. Who am I? Who am I? Who has God called me to be? And the second question, and what has God created me to do? Who am I to be? What am I to do? Moses is now beginning to wrestle with these questions that are at the very center of our life, of our story. See, Moses had to figure out who he was. He was asking these very deep questions. Because here's the thing, Moses was confused about all this. Like, right, he was a Hebrew, but not really, because he was raised by Pharaoh in the Egyptian court, right? And so he was a son of Pharaoh, but not really, because he was actually Hebrew. Like, so I think he was torn. He was torn. He was a prince of Egypt, but he was actually born of a slave. We know that Moses, if we continue to read the story, Moses goes on to live as an immigrant in a foreign land. He ends up marrying and having a wife and a child, but never really a home. Like, Moses is torn. He has no idea who he is. He's wrestling with this very deep sense of identity. Who was he to be? Who was he to be? And I think Moses begins to wrestle with this. All of a sudden, this sense begins to boil up inside of Moses that God had put him in this place for this moment, for this time, that Moses had a job to do. And I don't even know if Moses wanted to do it. Matter of fact, there are times, we'll read as we continue with the story, there are times when Moses didn't even really want to do it. There were times when if it would just been left to himself, I think he would have went a different way, but he could not. He could not turn his back on his people. He could not close his eyes to what he had once seen. And Moses recognized that he's got a job to do. See, what I love about this part of Moses' life, what I love about the story of Moshe anyway, is that it's a story about finding our purpose and calling. It's a story about discovering our destiny, interpreting our identity. And so I just want to talk a little bit today, and then hopefully we'll have some time maybe at the end that we can kind of process some of this together, because these are the questions that are at the very soul of who you are. And really, maybe I pray to God that you don't have to wait till you're 40 years old like Moses did to really begin to wrestle with these questions. Who are you? What are you to do? Who will you be? See, Moses now is wrestling with these two things. Number one, the idea of destiny. Destiny is what God has created you to do. And that's the one I think as Americans, as Westerners, probably where they're most concerned about. Like, we're all about action. Do something, leave a legacy, be great. You know, hopefully someday they'll have your name on up in lights somewhere. Like that's all of our drives, right? It's deeply embedded in who we are is this desire to do something in the world. Like, we want to do something. So that's a question of our destiny. But Moses is actually wrestling with a deeper question. He's wrestling with the question of identity. He's wrestling with the question of, who am I to be? Who has God created me to be? And I think the problem for a lot of us is that we're really more interested in what we're going to do than we are in who we're going to be. Too many of us decide what we're going to do with our lives based on prudence. Too many of us will decide what school we want to go to just based on the prudent decision. How am I going to put money on the table? What am I, you know, I need a job. Maybe you graduated from college and now you're faced with getting a job. And you're like, well, you know, I've got bills, right? We get very practical, and I'm not saying that's completely bad, but I think if you look into your own life, we have this bias towards destiny, right? Because we want to do something. But Moses is actually he's recognizing that the deeper question of identity is what's shaking his soul. Who am I? Who am I? So a couple things. If you ever find yourself in this position, let me give you a couple things that I've wrestled with as I've been through this. Because I've been through that time where your whole identity is reshaping. I've been in those moments of life where everything you felt that you knew and you thought was rock solid, everything you thought you could believe in and trust, the bottom falls out completely, and you have to ask yourself in that moment, who am I going to be now? Without all these other things, with all the things that prop you up, without all the things that kind of shed light on who you are when it's just you, who are you going to be? And so a couple things. Number one, recognize this. Recognize that God shapes who you are by what you experience. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I'll say it again. Say it again, but I'll tell you what I mean by it. Recognize that God shapes who you are. He shapes your identity by what you experience. So number one, don't run from what you're going through. So many times we're going through things in our life that seem overwhelming, they seem unfair, and they probably are unfair. You might be going through some things that are through no fault of your own. Now you're the one who's facing the injustice. Now you're the one who's the underdog. Now you're the one who's being oppressed and abused in some situation, or at least you have that sense in your life, and you may be completely valid. And so we have this sense that because it's unjust, because it was not fair, God must want me just to escape and to get away from it. But listen, sometimes don't run from and embrace it. Let me tell you why. Because you need to ask yourself, what do you need to learn? If you're going through this situation, have eyes open to see what is it that God is trying to speak into you, into your soul. What is he trying to put inside of you? Look at the things that you cannot ignore. Like, just like Moses, he couldn't stop seeing the truth that it was poured out, like as he was seeing, like he couldn't stop seeing that. But we want to try to ignore those things. So when you're in those moments of your lives where you feel like, I have no idea what's going on, look at what you would be prone to ignore. Look at it. Investigate it. Go down to the depths and to the bottom of it. What do you wish that you could unsee about your life? What are the things that you wish never happened? What are the things that you just would just most like forget about? Look at the things that you're trying to ignore, because here's the thing. The question that matters isn't who am I. The question that really matters is who am I becoming? See, this is a story about Moses being shaped by God. This is a story about Moses being God using all these experiences that Moses has, being raised up in Pharaoh's household, that's preparing Moses for something that Moses now cannot even imagine. Right? So really what truly matters is not even who you are, but the question is, who are you becoming? Who's God been trying to shape you into? And what if you begin to look at all the experiences that you've gone through, the struggles, the difficult moments, as things that are shaping your character? There are things that are beginning to put something inside that transforms who you are on a very deep soul level, that God is maybe through these moments beginning to shape your identity. Because before you can determine what you're to do, before you can ever answer the question, what am I to do? You must discover who you are becoming. So here's the first thing. Who are you becoming? Who is God trying to transform you into? The circumstances that have come into your life, I'm not saying God brought them there. Matter of fact, I think most times he didn't. But God does promise this, that he will use all of them for his good. So those circumstances that have come into your life, what has God brought them in there to transform about you? What are the things that he's trying to change? So answer the question. You may not know, you may not even be able to see who you are, but you can probably identify this. God's trying to make me more like this. God's making me more compassionate. Maybe God's trying to make you more humble. Maybe God's trying to make you to be the, help you to be the person that can be more loving, more generous. I don't know. But who are you becoming? Because before you can answer what you need to do, you've got to answer the question, who am I becoming? What is God transforming inside of my life? Because here's what we see in Moses. Moses not only, or God not only had a great plan for Moses, God prepared Moses to live a great life. God was putting Moses through this long season, 40 years of preparation. And we see this in a lot of the, really a lot of the people of faith. In Abraham, you see, in Abraham's story that God spoke a direct word to Abraham, just spoke to Abraham, just talked to him. Man, that'd be awesome. But it didn't always happen that way. We saw in Jacob's life, Jacob, God gave a divine word to Jacob's mom. God just spoke to Jacob's mom, some future for Jacob. In Joseph's story, God spoke to Joseph through dreams. But here's what's happened in Moses' life. Moses' life, God is beginning to prepare Moses in the arena of experience. All the things Moses is going through is now shaping who he is. All the things that he is, that seemed to Moses probably probably seemed unfair. The things of Moses' life, he was an orphan, right? When did he figure this out? Who knows? He's in Pharaoh's court. All of a sudden, pretty soon, he recognizes that he's not like everybody else. And he begins to put the story together, and it probably felt pretty unfair. And he recognizes that he had been torn from his own people. Now he sees all this injustice, and it was completely unfair. But all these experiences that God had brought Moses through, God was using to shape Moses' soul. He was becoming somebody that Moses could not even imagine being. See, I just think this is the amazing truth of Moses' life, is that all of the experiences that he had went and served to prepare him for a life that Moses could not even imagine. And see, for us, we can see this. We see this because we know the end of the story. Like for us, we can step back and we can see the end of the story. We know what's going to happen in the next 40 years of Moses' life. We know how the story is going to end. But Moses couldn't see this. Moses had to take those 40 years between verse 10 and verse 11. He had to take those 40 years day by day. Just 40 years of wondering what happened to his life. 40 years of wondering, seriously, God, this is what, you had nothing better in mind for me than this? Like, wasn't it amazing? I'm sure Moses was like, thank you, God, that you were so present in the first few months of my life. Thank you that you were there and you were doing these amazing things when I was born. But where are you now, God? And for the next 40 years, Moses goes through, and he's just wondering. But all of these experiences are beginning to prepare Moses for a life that he could not even imagine. And he had no idea. He couldn't see the end of the story. He couldn't see the over story. But here's what's beautiful. We know that Moses goes on to overthrow one of the most corrupt despots the world has ever known. We know he leads an amazing life. So we know that Moses needed those years of wandering in the Midian wasteland. We know that he needed those years of wandering because one day he was going to lead his people through those very same lands. Moses didn't know that. He just thought, what am I doing? He's exiled, now he's wandering through the wasteland trying to find a home, and he goes from living in the palace to living as a poor wanderer, just trying to scrape by. And imagine the thoughts that he had, and having no idea that he would walk those very same paths years later when he would lead his people to the promised land. We know that Moses would come to rely on that amazing scholastic excellence and the legal training that he had. We know that Moses would go on to write one of the most influential legal documents the world had ever seen, but Moses didn't know that. Moses just sat there and he's like, I don't know, why am I learning this stuff? He didn't know that. We know that Moses needed to face his own propensity towards violence because one day he would be dealing with a stubborn and obstinate people that would absolutely drive him nuts. So Moses had to work this out. See, we know these things because we can see the end of the story. But when Moses is going through it, all he knows is he's dealing with rage. And all he knows is he's wandering in a wasteland. And all he knows is he's lost and have no idea where his life's going. But every one of these moments prepares Moses to live a life that he could not even begin to imagine. See, we know the end, but Moses didn't know. He didn't know the end. And I just wonder how unfair it must have seemed. I wonder how confusing it must have seemed. I wonder how many times he thought, God, if this is you, then I don't even know who you are anymore. I don't know. We don't know. We can only guess. But here's what we do know. Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says, we know this, that in all things God works for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes. That's what we know. Whatever you're going through, whatever you've been through, all the moments of life that seem so unfair they were unfair. Some of you have been through things that were absolutely catastrophic and nobody should have ever had to face what you had to face. Some of you have been up against, some of you have suffered abuse. Some of you have had loss. And it's not fair. And I am so sorry that you've had to go through what you've gone through, but let me tell you this. We serve a God who is big enough and beautiful enough to take even that and to transform it into something beautiful and to use those things to shape you and to transform you. Listen, I believe that every single thing that I've been through, every single thing that you've gone through is only serving to prepare you for a life that you cannot even begin to imagine. Like if you just laid down and said, God, let me have the most wildest dream of the things I do. I don't even think you'd even be able to dream it of what God want to do and accomplish in your life. See, God says he will work all things together for the good. They weren't good. They were evil. But God says, I will bring good out of that. I'll bring good out of that. Listen, if I can impress one thing upon you today, and then we're going to spend some time singing and some worshiping, and we have some discussion. If I could impress one thing upon you today, this is the thing that I'd want you to remember. God is not trying to hurt you. He's trying to prepare you. See, last week we saw this beautiful story of God's plan, that God was going to do something amazing in Moses' life. We could see that from a child, right? The book of Hebrews tells us that Moses was no ordinary child. We know that God had an amazing plan, but now God spends the next 40 years or plus years of his life preparing Moses for that life. God's not trying to hurt you. He's trying to prepare you. He's trying to shape you. So open your eyes. Look at the things you're trying to ignore. Let these lessons begin to shape who you are. Don't be obstinate. If God's trying to make you more generous, then be more generous. If God is trying to confront that pain and that abuse and trying to bring healing, and if God's saying, let that go, then let it go. Because God is trying to shape you. He has something in mind for you. And what seems unfair, what feels like chaos, what in those moments felt like God was absolutely, completely absent, God is trying to prepare you for a life that is more amazing and more beautiful than you could ever imagine. And sometimes all we can see is what's right here. Sometimes we get so trapped in the present, we get so trapped in this moment, that all we can see is what's happening right here around us. You know what happens? Is we're a lot like Moses when he confronted that Egyptian taskmaster and killed him. Remember what it said? I said we'd come back to this. It says, remember, the scripture says that he looked all around. He looked right and he looked left. He looked all around. And I think that's sometimes what we do. We get trapped in this moment and we're trying so desperately to figure out what's going on. And so we look right, we look left, and we're trying to figure it out, and we're talking to people, and we go, wait, we must need a counselor, we get a counselor. We're trying all these things. And I think sometimes we're just like Moses. We look right and we look left, but I think sometimes we forget to look up. And I know that sounds cheesy. It sounds just like something a pastor would say. And I just want to admit, yeah, I heard a pastor say that, so I thought, well, put that in my notes. He's smarter than I am. But he forgot to look up, and it's true. I'm like, God, that's what I did. That's what happened to me. When I'd go through these moments, I'd be like, God, I can't make sense of this, right? And I'm the guy, I like to make sense of everything. And so you try to figure it out and you look all around, but sometimes have you forgotten to look up? See, don't forget to look up. Guys, I should have called you up. I'm sorry. I got thinking about what I was saying. And don't forget to look up. Don't forget that God has a purpose. He's got a plan. And even the moments of life where you cannot even begin to imagine what he's doing, even the moments of life where you least expect it. Don't forget, God is preparing you. He's shaping you. See, out of your character will flow your calling. So allow him to shape who you are. Allow him to begin to fashion you and begin to form you. Allow him to make you to be a more loving person. Allow him to begin to speak you and to make you to be more gentle. Maybe you just need to be a person that just could be a Maybe you just need a person that can just take a step back and take a breath sometimes. And as he begins to shape who you are, and as you can answer the question, who am I to be? It's then and only then you can truly understand what you are to do. Would you pray with me, Father? God, I pray that you would impress upon our souls, sear into our conscience this truth, that you're not trying to hurt us. You're trying to prepare us. God, would we be the types of people that would have the courage to enter into the darkest moments of our lives, that we could step into the crucible of suffering and we would face it with bravery, knowing that you're transforming us, that you're creating something beautiful, that you're preparing us for something. God, give us eyes to see the things we'd rather ignore. Open our eyes that we could see the truths about who we actually are. And God, would you allow the beautiful plan that you have for us to flow out of the person that you have created us to be? May we see today, may we answer the question, who am I becoming? God, as we sing these songs, I pray that they would flow out of a deep sense of gratitude, of humility, that we, out of a sense of recognition that you are a God who has endured it all with us and who loves us enough to take even the most painful, traumatic moments of our lives and to create something beautiful. We ask this today in Jesus' name. Amen.